Before I get into the sermon, I want to cover a couple of other things here first. Now, Ron Carey sent me this, which I think was very interesting. He says, I had a question pop into my head yesterday. It was, what is the all-time most downloaded audio sermon from our site? Said it took a few hours, but I decided to give you the stats on the top two sermons. I gathered the stats from January 1, 2005 to April 8, 2009, as I did not have access to the download information prior to that readily available. Sermon number one, Prophecy for Today, June 14th, 2003. 20,682 downloads. Sermon number two, Spiritual Strength in Time of Disaster, March 13, 2005, 15,599 downloads. Well, that's pretty good. Now, a little humor before we start with the serious business. A Harley rider was passing the zoo when he sees a little girl leaning into the lion's cage. Suddenly, the lion grabs her by the cuff of her jacket and tries to pull her inside to slaughter her under the very eyes of her screaming parents. The biker jumps off his bike, runs to the cage, hits the lion smack on the nose with a powerful punch, whimpering from the pain, the lion jumps back, letting go of the girl. And the biker brings her to her terrified parents, who thank him endlessly. A New York Times reporter was watching the whole event. The reporter said, "Sir, this was the most gallant, bravest thing I have seen a man do in my whole life." The biker replies, "Why, it was nothing, really. The lion was behind bars. I just saw this little kid in danger and acted as I felt right." The reporter says, "Well, I'm a journalist from the New York Times, and today's paper will have this story on the front page. So what do you do for a living? And what is your political affiliation?" The biker replies, "I'm a U.S. Marine and a Republican." Following morning, the biker buys the New York Times to see if it indeed brings news of his actions and reads on the front page, "U.S. Marine assaults African immigrant and steals his lunch." No, it's the truth of the media. Not only the bias, but their minds are so screwed up, that's how they think. Now, you've heard me bring several sermons on the coming global currency. And now it's all lined up, not only for global currency, but for a world government. And I think that's why the administration is acting so quickly and bringing in many of mid-level managers and advisors who are very questionable in their political outlook and loyalty to America. And as we will see, many of them have loyalties not to America, but to their cause of the global government. And what you are going to begin realizing, since many people are looking and saying, "Why is this happening? Why is this happening? Why is this happening?" There's a famous saying, "Nothing in politics happens by accident. It was planned." And so, the extreme left and the shadow elite, super elite government of this world, which includes all of the organizations that associated with it, trilateralists, Bilderbergers, Masons, Knights of Columbus, the Green Movement, Al Gore, the whole thing. The super elite have been planning this for a long, long, long time. And in my next letter, I have a history of how these things came about. But let me read an editorial by Rick Santorum, former senator from Pennsylvania. And he writes, the article is, "The elephant is in the room. Should be donkey is in the room. Obama versus the United States. The president is contemptuous of American values, and one key nominee prefers the judgment of other countries and global elites to the United States. Watching President Obama apologize last week for America's arrogancy before the French audience that owes its freedom to the sacrifices of Americans, and Obama did not even go over to pay honor to all of the American dead buried. He went someplace else. That act helped convince me that he has a deep-seated antipathy toward American values and traditions. His nomination of former Yale Law School Dean Harold Cole, who is Korean, to be the State Department's top lawyer constitutes further evidence of his disdain for American values and jurisprudence, I will add. This seemingly obscure position of Foggy Bottom's bureaucratic maze is one of the most important in any administration, shaping foreign policy in the courts and playing a critical role in international negotiations and treaties." Now, this one is more dangerous than the one he did last week of putting in there Andrea Brooks to be top advisors to the Department of Defense, and she's so far left, she almost lives in Cuba. Let's set aside Coe's disputed comments about the possible application of Sharia law in American jurisprudence. Now, remember one principle we've already covered. You cannot have two sovereigns within the same territory. And speaking of Sharia law, United Kingdom is done. They're talking about putting in Sharia law, and United Kingdom is about 5 years ahead of us, but I think the schedule that they have in bringing a lot of these things in will shorten that time frame distance down considerably. The pick is alarming for more fundamental reasons having to do with national sovereignty and constitutional self-governance. What is indisputable is that Cole calls himself a transnationalist. Now, pick up on that term, transnationalism. He believes U.S. courts must look beyond national interests to the mutual interests of all nations in a smoothly functioning international legal regime. Remember the uproar that happened when Sandra Day O'Connor referred to other countries in making a consensus judgment? Now it's going to become commonplace. He thinks the courts have a central role to play in domesticating international law into U.S. law. Now, that sounds like a bunch of gobbledygook, but it means transforming U.S. law and replacing it with international law. Now, one thing about American law is this. When we started out with the Constitution, the law was based upon common law, which came from the Bible. They changed that later into case law. So rather than judging everything by common law on its own merits, now you would have case law, and you have these judges that make weird decisions, and that becomes case law in which to argue other cases instead of the law. And what happens is that moves us from case law toward canon law, and canon law is European law. And canon law is you are guilty until proven innocent. And that comes from the Roman Catholic Church. Now, how many justices are Roman Catholic out of the 9? 5. Just think on that for a bit. And courts should use their interpretive powers to promote the development of a global legal system. For what? For global government. Now you see, we're going to have global financial system, right? They're working on a global religion, of which Tony Blair, former Prime Minister of Britain, newly baptized into the Roman Catholic Church, is heading up a foundation to bring all religions together. And how many sermons have I given on that, and even read from the World Bible? I have 2 of them at home. Now, Coase, transnationalism stands in contrast to good old-fashioned notions of national sovereignty, in which our Constitution is the highest law of the land, and above that is the Bible, and above that is God. In the traditional view, controversial matters, whatever they may be, are subject to democratic debate here. They should be resolved by American people and their representatives, not internationalized. So pay attention to how many times they say internationalism, global policy, world cooperation. How are we going to solve the pirate thing in Somalia? Well, we've got to get an international commission to handle that. Remember that just this last week? What Holland, Belgium, or Kenya, or other nations, or coalitions of nations, thinks has no bearing on our exercise of executive, legislative, or judicial powers. Coe disagrees. He would decide such matters based on the views of other countries or transnational organizations. We're going to talk about the transnational corporations because the Bible talks about them. Or rather, the entities, elites. So most people don't realize it. There is a huge world government out there with these super elites. And if someone says, oh, that's conspiratorial thinking. Well, how do you think all these things are coming down right now if it's not a conspiracy? And if Satan is deceiving the whole world, who does he use? Elephants? No, he uses people, just like God uses people. And there are those devoted to him. Just like Satan told Jesus, if you'll worship me, I will give you all the nations and the power and the glory of them. So if you want to know where the super elite are, look at the super rich which control the world. They are the ones. Unsurprisingly, Coe is a strong supporter of the International Criminal Court, which could subject U.S. soldiers and officials to foreign criminal trials for their actions while fighting for our security. Now remember, they arrested Milosevic, tried him over in The Hague, remember that? That's where the International Criminal Court is. And a Spanish judge wanted to indict Bush and Cheney for what they did in the Iraq War, and I think it was finally kiboshed, and I think the one who had the most to do with that was Rush Limbaugh, because he really raised a stink on that. You see, this didn't start recently. The first big push to start getting this going was the Federal Reserve Bank, founded in Jekyll Island in 1913 by international bankers from Europe. The Federal Reserve has nothing to do with the federal government. It was never validly approved by the Congress. And the law was passed late at night on Christmas Eve, and no one read it. Sound familiar? 1,018-page budget that no one read? Always have to have a crisis. Now, after that, guess who became president? Woodrow Wilson. And what did Woodrow Wilson do? He was one of the founders of the League of Nations. So this has been in the works a long, long time. Only back when Woodrow Wilson wanted to do this, there were enough senators and congressmen who knew better and did not approve the United States going into the League of Nations. So it collapsed, and especially when Hitler started his thing, then it went down for good. However, they didn't give up on it because they knew after World War II that they would bring it up again, and sure enough, they did. In 1947, they had in San Francisco the first convention for the United Nations of the World. Same people, same players, same agenda, and that also went down in a very similar way. Yes, supporter of the criminal courts, which means if someone does something over in that country which someone considers to be a crime, then they can have them arrested in that country, transported to the world court, and put on trial. And that world court is where? In Europe, which has what law? Canon law. So when you arrive, you are guilty. All right, let me read on. He has recommended that American lawyers work to undermine official American opposition to the court. If only Coe's transnationalism ended there, our Eighth Amendment prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment, Coe believes it should be interpreted in the light of foreign and international law to pay decent respect to the opinions of mankind. Now, that's all phrased in a way. Oh, isn't that nice? We consider other people's opinion. But it's the elite that sets the opinion, not the average man on the street. Santorum goes on, old fogies like me believe that we ought to pay more attention to the opinion of the founders who wrote the Constitution and the people who have lived under it. If Americans want to end the death penalty, they can do so through their elected state representatives. If foreign opinion trump those of Pennsylvania on capital punishment, why not other issues? Why not indeed, Cole thinks. International comity trumps American sovereignty. He believes that since certain nations recognize a right to same-sex marriage, our courts should too. He wrote that the principles of human dignity, now you see how they phrase it, always phrase it in these wonderful sounding things. Human dignity and autonomy are the essence of the modern right protecting democracy, demand that civil marriages be available to all couples and that the equality of all citizens triumph over the historical attitudes, meaning biblical attitudes. What's beneath this legal jargon? Simply this. Even if marriage in Pennsylvania has always been understood as involving one man and one woman, even if Pennsylvania's through referendum or constitutional amendment decide it should remain so, none of that counts. What should count are the views of the courts in other nations and international bodies. Now, here's what Coe thinks of abortion. He said, I'd rather have Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun, who used the wrong reasoning in Roe to get the right results. Coe wrote in the landmark abortion case, and let other people figure out the right reasoning. Well, you see, that's saying that the law and proper reasoning of the law is of no account. We are going to go by what we want and our opinions stand because we are the elite, we are the smart ones, we are the ones who do it. Stunning and revealing, Coe tells us that it doesn't matter if the right to abortion can be found in the Constitution. In fact, he concedes that Blackmun's reasoning was wrong, but it is up to others to get it right. And what have they been trying to do ever since? Get it right. How? Here's how he says you get it right, by finding out what the United Nations, European Union, and particular European nations think. Coe tops the list of Obama's potential Supreme Court nominees, and guess who is in the weakest health of all. There are actually two, Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Justice Stevens, both liberals. But you get him on there, and he's going to be such a powerhouse, he's going to corral the conservatives on the Supreme Court. Is this what John Kerry, Senator, meant when he once suggested that American policy must pass a global test? By whose standard? Or what Obama meant when he said last week that we have failed to appreciate Europe's leading role in the world. Thank you for all the wars in the 19th century. Thank you for the Hundred Years' Wars before that. Thank you for World War I and World War II and the communist uprising in Russia. Yes, let's follow their example. Isn't that a wonderful example for us? Or when he spoke of change we can believe in, and just who are we? I think his actions in bowing down to the king of Saudi Arabia tells more than anything else about Barack Hussein Obama, as well as his friendly, loving handshake and joking and jesting with Cesar Chavez, who hates America. Why is he so smug? Why is he so set on doing this? What does he know that we don't know? What does he know that he is supposed to do? Now, there's another report that I couldn't substantiate, but I think it is of good source, where that the National Security Agency, which is direct with Obama, consults with Henry Kissinger's consulting firm daily. So let's see where it's all heading. Financial New World Order, Goals Toward Global Currency and World Government by Andrew G. Marshall, and you can get this on globalresearch.ca/print article, and it is Towards Global Currency. All right? I'm going to be reading here just a little bit, but I think it's essential we understand what's going on. Now, I know some people would not have me read this long, but I think it's important that you be patient and bear with me and listen to what I'm going to read, because this is a dynamic report which tells us what they are doing. Following the 2009 G20 summit, now let's understand this, George W. Bush set this up for Obama, number one, with the first TARP package, and number two, by calling the first G20 meeting in Washington, D.C. Following the 2009 G20 summit, plans were announced for implementing the creation of a new global currency to replace the U.S. dollar's role as the world reserve currency. Point 19 of the communique released, which is in here, and I won't get into that, by the G20 at the end of the summit stated, "We have agreed to support a general special drawing rights allowance, which will inject $250 billion into the world economy." Now, if the U.S. dollar is going down, why do you want $250 billion American dollars? Maybe it's not as bad as they say, but the propaganda is that they want to make it bad. And if it's not really bad, then George Soros and company will short it and drive it down to near nothing like they did to destroy the British pound here in the last 2 years. So that the world economy and will increase and also give greater global liquidity. Special drawing rights are a synthetic paper currency issued by the International Monetary Fund, which is located in Europe, in Switzerland. As the London Telegraph reports, the G20 leaders have activated the IMF's power to create money and begin global quantitative easing. So what are they going to do with this $250 billion that's actually coming from America? The rest are going to come from the other G20, and it will be a trillion. This becomes reserve, so they can increase the special drawing rights 10 to 1. So that gives them $10 trillion worth of money that they can use on a global scale, which is accountable to no one but themselves. Most people don't understand that. They think, oh, yes, they're going to rescue the world economy. Isn't that nice? But what comes with the rescue? In doing so, they are putting a de facto world currency into place. It is outside the control of any sovereign body. Conspiracy theorists will love it, you see, because all of those who have talked about the conspiracy have been right. First time I heard of it was in 1967 when I heard Myron Fagan talk about the Illuminati, and it was on 333 vinyl records, you know, the old record players. For some of you who are very young, that's old-fashioned. And I remember going to the feast, and a certain minister would always invite us out. He was a big leading evangelist who spoke on the radio and all of that. He would always invite us out to have dinner with his family and other ministers, because Doris used to babysit the kids and everything, and she practically grew them up for 4 years. And she was in high demand because she was good, because no one could get away with anything. So she took care of that evangelist kids and other evangelist kids and so forth. So anyway, I told him, I said, oh, Mr. So-and-so, you've got to hear this. So I told him about it. And he said, all that conspiracy stuff, just forget it. And I thought, whoa. So what I did, I said, okay, I'll just file it in the back of my mind and watch. And in watching, I found that everything was coming to pass exactly as he said on those records in 1967. And that was a recording which went back way before that time, clear back to 1948. All right. I personally believe that with the world currency coming, they've given up on regional currencies because the euro wasn't strong enough to handle the financial debacle and replace the dollar. So now they're looking to regional unions of economic spheres, all using a single global currency. So they have the European Union, which has 27 nations in it. Then they have the Gulf Cooperation Council and Regional Currency, which I talked about in a sermon, that, hey, all of the Arab states are getting organized. The Asian Monetary Union, which then will include China, Japan, and then there's a Southeast Asian one. African Monetary Union, North American Monetary Union, the South American Monetary Union. And those are already in place. They already have the agreements signed, sealed, and delivered. And as I mentioned before, there are going to be 10 regions. Comment was made, what happens to the Amero? Bye-bye, Amero. They won't need it. Completely bypass it. See, what has happened, they have eliminated one step in their plan because it's more efficient to go to a world currency. Because when you bring that in, you will bring immediate prosperity because there are no balance of payments between nations any longer. He has many, many quotes here, beginning with a survey by the IMF in 1998 about call for global currency. I've already covered a lot of those. But we know what Timothy Geithner said. And why was Timothy Geithner really the one wanted for the U.S. Treasury Department? I think that it was because he probably had already written all the regulations for global currency and the regulation of the G20. Now, he was the president of the Federal Reserve in New York, and he knew all the stuff that was going on. And he knew that it was going to go down. All the bankers knew it was going to go down. I don't think they realized it was going to be quite that bad. They already have a logo for it. with the dollar sign, the euro, and the yen. 3. Have you ever heard of the Trilateral Commission? That's part of the conspiracy, too. Europe, America, and Japan. So we think, oh, isn't that nice? All these countries are working together. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Now, I have a little more reading to do, so please just bear with me. A new world order in banking in March 2008, following the collapse of Bear Stearns, Reuter reported on a document released by the firm Credit Sites, which said that financial firms face a new world order and that more industry consolidation and acquisitions may follow after J.P. Morgan Chase, and they bought WaMu, Washington Mutual. In the event of further consolidation, that is bringing banks together and making them bigger banks, potential acquisitioners identified by credit sites were J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, U.S. Bank Corp., Goldman Sachs, and Bank of America. In June 2008, before he was Treasury Secretary in the Obama administration, Geithner was head of the New York Federal Reserve, and he wrote an article for the Financial Times following his attendance at the Bilderberger Conference. Bilderberger, ring a bell? Yes. In which he wrote that banks and investment banks whose health is crucial to the global financial system should operate under a unified regulatory framework. He's got it all written. It's done. Don't think they're just starting to implement it. They're putting it in place permanently. And he said that the U.S. Federal Reserve should play a central role in the new regulatory framework, working closely with supervisors in the United States and around the world, other bank supervisors. Guess who's going to be the Inspector General of all the banks receiving TARP funds? President of Fannie Mae. All right, let's go on. I have a little more to read here. In November 2008, The National, a prominent United Arab Emirate newspaper, reported that Baron David D. Rothschild, the richest man in the world who controls banks in Europe and in England, and he's the one who said, I care not who makes the laws if I control the currency. He was not a part of the official party accompanying Prime Minister Gordon Brown. Following an interview with Barron, it was reported that Rothschild shares most people's views that there is a new world order. In his opinion, banks will deleverage and there will be a new form of global governance, which means government. And when one of the Arabs said, oh, Mr. Rothschild, how did you do with the financial downturn? He said, I did quite well, thank you, because I have insights into what's going on. Meaning, we help planet. In February 2009, the Times Online reported that a new world order in banking is necessary and that it is increasingly evident that the world needs a new banking system and that it should not bear much resemblance to the one that has failed so spectacularly. But of course, the ones who are shaping this new banking system are the champions of the previous banking system. Yes, let the inmates run the insane asylum again. The solutions that will follow are simply the extension of the current system, only speeded up through the necessity posed by the current crises. An emerging global government. See, now, they're going to have global finances. Now they need a global government. They're going to have a global legal system and a global religious system. And that's what's talked about in the book of Revelation. We'll see that in a bit. We've covered some of that. Now, all of those who are looking to the old way, Europe is going to rise up and be the power. And I remember someone wrote an article about, you know, the 10 toes, one leg in East Europe, one leg in West Europe, and we see the smoke rising up, and all of this never happened. Same way with all of the ne'er-do-well prophets and witnesses that the Church of God has produced out of the vanity of so many different men. All right, the emerging global government. A recent article in the Financial Post stated, the danger in the present course is that if the world moves to a super-sovereign reserve currency engineered by experts, such as the UN Commission of Experts, led by Nobel laureate economist Joseph Stiglitz, we would give up the possibility of a spontaneous money order and financial harmony for a centrally planned order and the politicization of money. Such a regime change would endanger not only the future value of money, but more importantly, our freedom and prosperity, and we'll tell you why here in just a little bit. Further, an uncomfortable characteristic of the new order may well turn out to be that the global income gaps will widen because of the rising powers such as China, India, and Brazil. They will regard those below them on the ladder as potential rivals and won't let them come up. The author further states that the new world order thus won't necessarily be any better than the old one, and that what is certain, though, is that global affairs are going to be considerably different from what they are now. In April 2009, Robert Zoellick, president of the World Bank, said, if leaders are serious about creating new global responsibilities or governance, let them start by modernizing multilateralism to empower the World Trade Organization and the IMF and the World Bank to monitor national policies. And I wrote a letter and gave a sermon that they're going to combine the World Bank and the IMF. They are going to do it. David Rothkopf, a scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, that's one of those study groups which is pushing these things, former Deputy Undersecretary of Commerce for International Trade in the Clinton Administration, and former Managing Director of Kissinger and Associates, and a member of the Council of Foreign Relations, look how he's all hooked into the elite, recently wrote a book titled Superclass, the Global Power Elite and the World They Are Making, of which he is certainly a member. When discussing the role and agenda of the global superclass, he states that, in a world of global movements and threats that don't present their passports at national borders, it is no longer possible for a nation state acting alone to fulfill its portion of the social contract. So there needs to be a new contract, a world constitution. Bear with me, I have just a little more here. In December 2008, the Financial Times ran an article written by Gideon Rachman, a past Bilderberger attendee, who wrote that, for the first time in my life, I think the formation of some sort of world government is plausible. Big catch is America. So now you know why Obama's doing what he's doing and the administration that he has is doing what it's doing to subjugate us, to make us good candidates for world government. And that a world government would involve much more than cooperation between nations. It would be an entity with state-like characteristics, and we'll talk about the beast that was and is not, and yet is. And if you haven't read the book, A Diplomacy by Deceit by John Coleman, Dr. John Coleman out of Reno, go online and look it up. The European Union has already set up a continental government for 27 nations, which could be the model. The EU Supreme Court, a currency, thousands of pages of law, a large civil service, and the ability to deploy military force. Well, that's questionable right now. Then he asked if the European model could go global and states that there are three reasons for thinking that that may be the case. First, he states, it is increasingly clear that the most difficult issues facing national governments are international in nature. There is global warming, global financial crisis, global war on terror. Secondly, he states that it could be done largely as the result of the transport and communication revolutions having shrunk the world. Thirdly, it is made possible through an awakening change in the political atmosphere. Sound familiar? Change you can believe in? As the financial crisis and climate change are pushing national governments toward global solutions, even in countries such as China and the U.S. that are traditionally fierce guardians of national sovereignty. One last paragraph. He quoted an advisor to French President Nicolas Sarkozy saying, "Global governance is just a euphemism for global government," and that the core of the international financial crisis is that we have global financial markets and no global rule of law. However, Rockman states that any push toward global government will be a painful, slow process. I think it will be painful, but it will come faster than he thinks. He then states that the key problem in this push can be explained with an example of the EU, which has suffered a series of humiliating defeats and referendums by having the people of Europe vote on the Constitution for Europe. When plans for an even closer union have been referred to the voters. So he said, having people vote on it's not a good idea. In general, the union has progressed fastest when far-reaching deals have been agreed by technocrats and politicians and then pushed through without direct reference to the voters to vote on it. International governance tends to be effective only when it is anti-democratic. Now you know why all the executive orders. And I need to give a sermon on all the executive orders which could slap on America a government of absolute oppression overnight. Now that I've done all the reading from the report, we'll look at the Bible. Let's go to the next track, please.